I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's noon. Thanks for listening and spending part of your afternoon with us. We're Grant and Danny. You are locked in to 106.7 The Fan. A couple of past occurrences on this date in sports history. 55 years ago today, Danny, a sold-out crowd of 47,879 people, wouldn't be able to gather that many anywhere today,
seriously,
filed into the Astrodome in Houston to watch the first-ever indoor baseball game. And I know that a lot of people hate indoor baseball and they have a problem with the domed stadiums. As you know, I don't. I have no problem with it. I like the way Houston can close their roof. And I even didn't hate the Trop. I mean, I went to Tropicana Field to see the Angels and the Rays during Redskins preseason August action years ago for the first time. And I was in the section all by myself. There were no lines to get food or drinks. It was a hot day in Florida.
Plenty of distancing there going on. Yeah, on a
normal
day.
You can do social distancing. The Rays and the Marlins could keep playing. But I'm telling you, man, like I enjoyed the experience. It was air-conditioned. It was nice. There was the sun to contend with. I'll watch baseball indoors. No problem.
Yeah, the Houston Dome was delightful. I think if it's nice, I got no issue with it. You know, the retractable roof. I think, in fact, my hot take is that every stadium that plays outdoor games, at least for baseball, should have a retractable roof so that you don't get rained on. There should be no rain delays ever again in pro sports. But when the Dome is bad, like I think the Trop is bad. The old Astrodome was bad. It was basically RFK with a roof on it. That's not the best, but that is a monumentous moment in sports history where you can play a game despite the elements.
39 years ago today, Dodgers rookie Fernando Valenzuela made his first major league start opening day. Shutout victory over the Astros and Fernando Mania began. We can get into that in more detail a little bit later because what a career. Cy Young, rookie of the year, six-time All-Star, a World Series champ, a Gold Glover, a Silver Slugger, and a major league player of the year. But right now, one of our guests of the year, chopping wood with us, swinging that axe, watching trees fall down on the Blitz, our buddy Michael Phillips. Richmond Times Dispatch. He covers the Skins. Michael, how you getting by, man? You bored yet? What are you doing to pass the time these days?
Well, I'm off this week, so I'm running homeschool this week. So we're learning about counting money today. Just doing some numbers, some basic subtraction. It's great to get the refresher, certainly. With regard to your earlier topic, I'd love to tee up sometime. Best stadiums that everybody complained about but were actually fine. The Georgia Dome is number one on that list. Great place. I don't know why they tore it down.
Miguel, I get the sense from Ron Rivera talking that they're just going to take Chase Young. And I don't think you're looking at his history of not trading down. He's not quite Gettleman-esque, but it's close. I think they've got their heart set on just taking Chase Young, not regardless of what comes across their desk, but I think they think it's pretty much a done deal. Do you have that same inference?
Yeah, I think that when they say, you know, kind of when you're hearing it's going to take a massive offer to move them off of it, that's not negotiating. That's actually just them telling the truth. Like, it's going to take an offer so good that you guys go on the radio the next morning and say, wow, I can't believe somebody gave up five first-round picks to move up and get, you know, Tua or whatever it is. They're going to have to truly be blown away. And I don't think that's coming, and I don't think they need that to come. I think they are perfectly happy with this being a chalk draft. Burrow at one, Chase Young at two. Everybody leaves happy.
But then they don't have a pick in the second round, and they have so many needs. I mean, let's say they don't pick again until the third round. I don't think they're going tight end there. I think they're going to try to find the value a round or two later than that. What do they do? Is it corner? Is it tight end maybe? Left tackle? What would they do with their next pick?
Yeah, and I do think they're looking at trading Trent post-draft. I think that's when teams are going to be maybe a little bit more comfortable with what they have, what they need, what they want to give up. And every GM is always much more willing to give up next year's draft pick than this year's draft pick. That's just the way it's always been. Now, Rivera has the luxury of knowing, I'm going to be here next year. I'm going to be here in 2 years. So he can take somebody's picks next year and you know, wait it out with Trent for a couple more weeks. So I do think that's the likely scenario. But, yeah, I think you got to go left tackle. I just think it's a crucial position on a football team in 2020. And you know, not to say that they'll be able to get somebody who can jump in right away, because they won't. But you need to start getting some developmental guys. You need to start building depth at that position. You need to find somebody through whatever means necessary.
Michael, I don't think I've gotten your opinion on this, so apologies if this is repeat for you. But I think the world views Kyle Allen one way, and Ron Rivera and his staff view him a different way. I don't think he's necessarily a threat to, quote-unquote, beat out Dwayne Haskins, and they know that the future is Haskins and it's not Allen. But I also could see them breaking glass and going to Allen to try to get some success in the early part of the season, whether it's 3 games, 4 games, 5 games, etc., just to try to get this culture off on the right foot. I think he's a threat to play. I don't think the rest of the world views him that way. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think the virus is actually probably your number one reason why you chalk that up. That's not an original opinion, of course, but if this is the sort of thing where we booted up on 1 month's notice, which it very much could be, August 15th, hey, everybody, we're doing a month of training camp, and then the first game, September 15th, let's go. You know, I think that Kyle Allen is probably not only likely to start, I think he would start. I think that Rivera doesn't want to throw Haskins to the wolves like that. He'd much rather give him the instruction, give him the training. And I think everybody could agree that that's just fine. You know, I love the contrary opinion of that. Well, what if Kyle Allen does great and wins the job and Dwayne never gets a chance? Wonderful. That would actually be a phenomenal scenario, because it would involve Kyle Allen being good enough that you would not even look at the kid, which means he's probably taking you to the playoffs. In all likelihood, he wouldn't, of course. Dwayne Haskins would get in eventually, would get his turn. But I could absolutely see that early season scenario playing out.
We don't talk enough about how bad the Redskins' secondary situation is right now after the move they made for Quentin Dunbar. If you think about it, you're going to have maybe Fabian Moreau starting at corner, and I'm guessing Sean Davis starting at safety. People might not be able to recognize him if he was sitting next to him right now. That's your secondary at the moment. Where would you rank that among their needs?
Yeah, and you're really hoping for a big second-year leap from Jimmy Moreland, who was pretty overmatched once the regular season began, but you're hoping maybe he reclaims some of that preseason magic here after a full offseason of training. I don't think Ron Rivera has any urgent needs. I know that sounds crazy to say, cut 3-13 team. I think he is perfectly content to grab 3 depth guys, let them battle it out, rotate them through the year. You know, not to suggest he wants to lose games this year. I think he'd like to win, get the culture off on the right foot, all that. But I don't think he wants to rush into bad deals, locking into long-term deals. And that was the Quentin Dunbar thing. Look, I think they should have signed Quentin Dunbar. I'm very much on record as saying that. But I understand where he's coming from, too. You know, I got the 3-4 year window here to do the things I want to do. If I sign you to a 4-year deal, I'm locked into you for all 4 years. And if it turns out we don't get along, or I don't like what you bring, we're stuck. And you know, that's a drag for the entirety of my tenure here, potentially. So I think he's content to bring in a lot of depth, a lot of undrafted guys, and see what emerges over the course of the season.
Michael, thank you, buddy. Appreciate you joining us on your week off, man. Have a good one.
Absolutely.
All right, there he goes. Let's talk some baseball, please, Tommy. Our pal Todd Dybus is here, NBC Sports Washington, covers those Nationals. Todd, have you talked to any of the players? What do they think about this proposal, or what do you think the main obstacles are that's of what's been reported and floated, that they're just going to be sequestered in Arizona for about 5 months, maybe away from everybody that they know and love?
I think there's a huge list of obstacles. There's a huge list of logistical concerns. There's a huge list of pragmatic concerns. There's the ongoing baseline of safety concerns. There's the trying to hold down human nature. How do you assure that no one is going to kind of break the rules at some point to go out and kiss a girlfriend one time and then come back into the hotel and then you have a major problem? It's the Arizona plan. I understand why they're trying to look at everything possible, but the Arizona plan I thought was fraught with issues and remains so. And that's okay for a first plan. There were a lot of problems, but they're just trying to figure things out at this point.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at is, you know, people can point out the issues, but we're throwing something against the wall, and I guess we've made a little bit of progress. And how do you think this plays out? Is there some variation of baseball this summer, Phoenix or otherwise?
Yeah, you know, Grant, like the huge complication to me is the length of season and how baseball is constructed, right? 162-game season, and if you're going to have actual legitimate integrity to a season, you want to get as close to 162 as possible, but they can't start yet. So they're trying to push the start so they can get to as close as 162 as possible and not be playing baseball in January somewhere somehow. So that's kind of where the headbutting starts to happen. And, you know, I talked to Max Scherzer last week. He said everything is on the table. He had even mentioned June 1st back then. He thinks there needs to be 3 full weeks of spring training before games can start in whatever form the games would start. So there's just a ton to figure out. And everybody has to agree, right? Like the union and the league agreed to this these initial parameters when first discussed, just to kind of move forward at all. Now you're going to need the union, the league, state, local, federal, CDC, everybody needs to be on board with assuming the risk. Because it will never be zero risk.
Todd, I've gone back and forth on this. I don't have a good answer, so I want your opinion. Would a shortened or sprint-like season favor the Nationals, who are very old, or would it be a detriment because they're old? I can't figure out where I stand on that.
Yeah, I think it's just it's a matter of health for just about everybody, right? Like, if you have Trey Turner get hit by a pitch again, and he's out for 6 weeks because he broke a finger, I mean, you're in major, major trouble. If you're 19 and 31, you're dead. And so the sprint would be fascinating for multiple reasons. I think it would enable teams that are kind of good and wouldn't make it over the course of 162, you know, to be in the mix. I think it would bring in some teams, that would be completely out of it, would be kind of middle of the pack and compelling. And I think we would see some new experimental ideas that when the CBA comes around the bend in 2021, you have a tangible thing to look at and say, well, we tried this and this is how it worked and it worked well, and maybe we should implement it, or of course the opposite of that. So the sprint would be fascinating and all the crazy rules around it. I guess ultimately my question is, do you really need to force things that bad, or should you just wait until next February? Because by the time you're done, it's going to be next February, like immediately. And then you could start a full regular year. That's another question baseball has to answer.
Todd Dybus of NBC Sports Washington.com. What have you accomplished? What are you proud of that you've done during this coronavirus pandemic that you might not have otherwise?
I was just talking about this on our Nationals Talk podcast. I bought a power washer and I put it to use at the house starting yesterday. Yeah, so that kind of like is the basis for a bunch of house projects, probably maybe even painting the entire house while this is going on. So there's a lot of home improvement going on here, accompanied by a variety of swear words and frustration.
As there should be. When
you're
doing
home improvement.
Yeah.
Dude. We got the frustration and swear words, but no home improvement. So good for you, man. You gotta step up. Appreciate your time, bro.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
See you, Todd.
Actually, that could be fun. I'd love to get a couple calls on that if you guys will hop in next as you're in the car doing the essential work or at the house at 800-636-1067. What have you accomplished over the last few weeks of your sequestering and your quarantining that you wouldn't have otherwise? Something that you got done, maybe it was on the hit list that you previously just didn't have the time or weren't bored enough to do. 800-636-1067. We could try to take a couple of those. Also, as we continue, we're getting closer to the movie club today at 12:45. The NBA has released some new details on the horse challenge that has been put together to be televised on ESPN on Sunday. We'll pass that along to you. And we'll get into the Redskins draft. In what rounds might they address which positions? All this hour, right here on Grant and Danny on the Fan. Tim says he transplanted a tree. He's done a ton of gardening projects. He's learning to play the guitar. He's brewed beer. He's drank 2 bottles of whiskey. And he's playing catch with his son every day. His family is reconnected, which has been a blessing. Not a bad list of accomplishments during the quarantine. Gylo says he finished Fallen Order, Ozark, and has just started reading Helter Skelter. Look, a lot of us have finished TV shows.
Yeah.
I'm looking more, Guy Lowe, for some home cooking, some house projects. Have you done anything at your house as a handyman, Danny, that you have always wanted or meant to do that you haven't been able to?
I can't stress to you how much the answer is no. Like, if it's not just the answer is no, it's in a way that's so especially no that it's impossible to quantify. Because, like, some people are like, oh, I just haven't gotten around to it. I've been so busy. This is A, that, but B, I think I'm like you in that I am 100% completely incapable of completing any kind of project in that genre.
Right.
There's nothing that I can bring to the table with regards to that. I think you'll give me credit, the least masculine person of all time.
Because I think this could work. I mean, I have had a ton of things accomplished that a professional who has skills and can work with their hands has done.
Sure, sure, sure.
I just haven't actually done them. Does that count, though, if, you know, this thing in my shed that I wanted to get done is now done, or you know, I needed to fix this part of the front of my house and someone came out and did that, or I wanted to get some landscaping done and my friends at Living Color did that. Like, does that count?
I need to say that it does, and here's why. Go back to the beginning, right? Before people said this is a shekel, or this is a dollar, or this is a yen, or whatever your denomination is, right? A drachma or something. One guy goes, hey, I got a bunch of sheep. And the other guy goes, I got a bunch of goats. One guy's like, well, I need some goats. The other guy said, I need some sheep. Let's trade. Boom. Services are traded. Commodities are traded. And hence, economy was born. You said, I got a need. Someone filled it. The box has been checked. It is off the list. It was on. Now it's off. Or it's on with a great big check mark or a line right through that SOB. You completed that, Grant. How you completed it, that's nobody's business. That's nobody's business but yours. If it was through blood, sweat, and tears and getting your hands dirty, plunging them into the muck, or if it was simply saying, here's some currency, gentleman or woman, you get this done for me, the task got done. It counts as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I do too. And one thing I actually did myself is I cleaned out my entire shed and got rid of all of the junk I don't want. And I guess I needed help because I called 1-800-GOT-JUNK and they came and picked all the stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the shed was immaculate, and now I'm able to move a bunch of boxes and things in there for storage as we get ready to move. But I feel good about that. That was done with these hands you're looking at in Zoom right now. That was a success. I can't imagine someone not giving me the credit if I had to make the call, I had to schedule the appointment, I had to get people out there, I had to give over the money and all those things. So I feel like I'm getting a lot of boxes checked. But speaking of things I can't imagine, here's something that is weird. And I don't want to become the show every day that just talks about things that we complain about, basically. That's not the goal here. I know yesterday I was annoyed by people on Twitter who made my compliment to billionaires giving away billions of dollars somehow a negative. But my thing today would be this. So I last night I was talking online about Virginia, and Ralph Northam, the governor, allowing for restaurants and bars previously not able to serve cocktails. They had beer and wine, you know, that was sealed that they could serve as to-go items. But now they're going to do like a full bar with pre-made cocktails, I believe, is the way I'm understanding this.
Uh-huh.
And it starts tonight at midnight. We talked about it at the beginning of the show. But I was referencing how this is amazing, and I'm glad that they're doing this because it's going to help restaurants and bars, and I want them to stay open. But obviously, like everyone, I think there's a fear that maybe some people won't follow the rules. Regardless, I got this tweet from a guy, and there's always this guy in every crowd. He goes, why would anyone go to a restaurant to get a cocktail when they can just make it themselves? And this is the same logic of someone who got really mad at me a few weeks ago when I found a company that I paid to come pick up dog poop. And they're like, how dare you do that? If you can't pick that up, you shouldn't own a dog. And my response to them was, well, I can cook, but I go to restaurants. Should I not be allowed to go to restaurants? I can clean my shirts, but I still take them to a dry cleaner. Like, there's a lot of things you can do out of convenience or, you know, because they're better at it or professionalism, or maybe you just don't want to, that you choose not to do. I'll bet you somehow, some way, people will still make cocktails and occasionally pay a couple of bucks for someone to make one for them. Maybe it's because they're doing a service to a place that they like, or maybe it's just because they were lazy that day and didn't want to make their own cocktail. But the people who, and I'm sure they've never eaten in restaurants, by the way. I'm yeah. sure that they've never used a dry cleaner, or they've never done anything other than all of the work for themselves. How dare them? Why would they do that? Why would they get a cocktail at a to-go takeout? Why wouldn't they just make it at home? Am I wrong, or is that one of the dumbest arguments you've ever heard?
You're not wrong. And again, it's somehow like the tough guy or whatever you want to call that. But it's like, why would anyone go to the dentist? I could put some metal in my mouth and make my gums bleed. You know what I mean? Like you're a horse's ass. It's a couple of different phenomenon, whether it's, you know, that thing on social media where it's like, here's a picture of my dinner. And then something like you put the picture of your dinner up and one guy's like, nice napkin fold. What? This is about the dinner. And you're like, noticed the table centerpiece, or you think my glass is weird. Like, go
something
away
like
forever
that happened,
that
by
guy.
The way.
Yeah.
You posted a picture of me and the dog the other day and someone commented on something. I can't remember what it was in the picture. Oh, it was like the background of your computer had a bunch of screen grabs. And they're like, holy screen grab, Batman. As if like that was an important thing to note in your picture.
That's the takeaway. You got it. You nailed it.
You solved it.
Gadget. Yeah. Nice job, head detective over there. I'm sure the FBI is calling for you. They need
there's
your services.
One of these that I agree with, kind of. I've always felt weird when I walk by at an airport. Always. And there's other places where they do this. I don't see them much. But where people are getting their shoes shined, mm-hmm. and they're wearing the shoes that are being shined, like, it's just something. It's like getting a haircut or
why would anyone go get a haircut? You could just trim your own.
Yeah, exactly.
Why would anyone do that?
But people will sit in this chair and they'll like read the paper or look at their phone or whatever, just like I would do while someone's cutting my hair, just to service. And someone shines their shoes. And I don't know why. That one is always uncomfortable for me. And it probably wouldn't be if you dropped your shoes off and you came back and you picked them up and someone cleaned them for you. I don't think I would have an issue. But just the visualization of an adult kind of on their hands and knees, like scrubbing someone's shoes while the other guy sits there while it's being done. I don't know. Like, I'll never be able to do it. In a million years, I wouldn't get my shoe shine.
I have done it, and I will tell you that you're right to be uncomfortable. It's something that, it's from a time gone past. The older generation did this, right? I mean, the Johnny Cash song Get Rhythm is about that, right? Where, you know, you end up feeling really good about yourself. You know, like the fresh shine, you look like $1 million, and, you know, you get that, and you pop around for the rest of your day. And I remember, I think I was with my grandfather years ago, and he was like, come on over here, we're going to get this done. And I was like, wow, okay. I was so uncomfortable the entire time, and that stuck with me, how uncomfortable that was. And I went, I did that. That's in the done pile. I'm never doing that again because of how uncomfortable I found it.
Cringy. I mean, and I feel sometimes bad, like I'm getting my hair cut. This is something I can't do. The professional has to do. This is their living. But I'm sitting there on my phone, and I feel, I don't know if selfish is the right word or rude. But look, man, life's going on. You're cutting. I got nothing else to do. We can make an awkward conversation, or I'll just, you know, scroll through Instagram and Twitter and see what's what. But that is very normal. Everybody does it. And because of that, I guess I'm just over it. But the shoe shining, choice, that elective choice.
I'm all about having the convo for the haircut. But the problem is, and this is an old man thing, I don't know what the technical term for this is. And maybe you do. But I think you know this about me, having been in the same room with me for years and years and years. I have bad, what I call filtered hearing. So if there's a noise going on anywhere close to me, I can't hear what people are saying. Like, it looks like they're just moving their lips. So what I hate going to bars with my wife. When we were just dating, she'd always want to, like, hey, let's go out. And I would go, please, let's just go to dinner, and then let's go somewhere else so we can talk to each other. I cannot hear her. I can't hear. It just gets lost in the din. This has always been the way with me. And so, like, there's the clippers near my ear, and he's like, I'm like, what? What? I don't know what you said. And so I'm doing the huh, which is so turbo awkward when you're getting your haircut, because then, like, that dude's self-conscious, then he's got to stop the haircut. I'd like the haircut to proceed and still be able to have a conversation with you. It's very, very uncomfortable for me. So maybe I should just get on my phone. And it's like that massage where it's like, no conversation.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You get a massage, and you just kind of chill there, and occasionally they're like, and I don't even know. They're like, hard enough? Good enough? And I'm like, yep.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Absolutely. Go for it. Let me go back to just sleeping while this weird music plays in the background.
Right. Enya's
Grant
awesome.
And Danny, 106.7 The Fan. What's ESPN going to do to make their horse challenge this weekend, Sunday, involving NBA, WNBA players more fun to watch? Tackle that next. Danny, I told you I've been broadcasting outside today because of the technical issues I was having in the basement yesterday. So the last couple of days I've sat outside on the deck and done this little operation with you. Well, starting to drizzle. and that's not going to work. So I've now moved myself basically up against my house. It's the worst makeshift studio that's ever happened.
Wow.
I think things still sound okay for the most part.
Yeah,
which is all that matters.
Yeah, which but, that is the key. Do what we have to do.
Got some raindrops coming, and who knows? If you start to hear a thunderstorm, I will have to figure it out as we go. But
well, I'm down here in my laundry room, as you know, the Essex Home Studio, and everyone here is okay at the office. But apparently, I didn't even notice this, but it thunderstormed already here, and it lasted a very short time. But I went upstairs just now, and I kind of did a double take at our little backyard area. There were pools of water, and it was soaking wet. And I'm like, oh, no, the kids have been playing with the hose. No, that was from the thunderstorm that was here and gone in about 15 or 20 minutes or so. So maybe you have that to look forward to. Hopefully it clears out, because right now it is gorgeous here, and no cars have come through the office.
It was really nice at the Essex Home Studio here, where no cars have also been crashing into us. But then it's gotten really dark, so we'll see what happens. The ESPN-NBA combination has struck up an idea, and it's going to be televised on Sunday night. We're going to have a horse challenge. I keep wanting to say horse game, but that just doesn't sound right, does it?
Yeah, what do you want to call it?
I think a competition. NBA horse challenge presented by State Farm. So they got 8 participants. Group 1, Chauncey Billups is going to take on Trey Young. Mike Conley is going to take on Tamika Catchings. Group 2, Zach LaVine of the Bulls is going to take on Paul Pierce, the longtime Wizard and short-time Celtic. Chris Paul of the Oklahoma City Thunder and Ali Quigley of the Chicago Sky. So they've got 8 participants ready to go. They're going to start this on Sunday night at 7 p.m. How much of this do you think is taped in the can? I have to imagine they're going to basically, maybe they're already filming or they're going to film in the next day or two and just have it completely put together, ready to hand ESPN to hit a button so that people can see it come Sunday at 7. Because if you're using Zoom or some type of, you know, video situation, correct me if I'm wrong, but like that, all it takes is freezing or something happening, and now your television program is kaput and everyone's sitting around waiting for Chauncey Billups to get back on wireless. Like, oh man, sorry, my internet crashed. That could be a disaster.
Yeah, or if it's supposed to go for an hour or however long with commercial breaks, then you got people sitting around. I mean, what if, you know, Chauncey starts off cold for 3 seconds and Ali Quigley knocks down her first 5 shots and that's it? Yeah, then you're like just hanging out for however long. So I don't see live anywhere. So I'm guessing that the majority is going to be in the can at least by the time they get to broadcast, right? Because I don't see that broadcasting live.
And it could also just be bad TV where, like, the dunk contest is like, oh, I missed a dunk. I missed, another dunk. Mm-hmm. This has gone on for 6 minutes and there's nothing interesting happening. I mean, as far as the horse goes, what if they exchange, like, they're missing, they brick a few shots back to back to back, or even if they hit them, it's anticlimactic and kind of boring. I think you want to basically roll on everything you can and then present a package of the best 60 minutes of entertainment, right?
Yeah, that's how I would view it. So I initially thought when I saw this that they were going to do it closer to live, but it sounds like here, just reading between the lines, that it is kind of exactly the way you're talking about, going, hey, we're going to have, you know, let's say for the sake of argument, again, I can't remember what the matchups are, so forgive me, but let's say Trae Young beats Chauncey Billups in 5 shots. We'll cover it that way, right? Instead of just dragging the thing out just to say, hey, we're going to fill 2 hours. They're going to find a way to get you the most compelling stuff, pick and choose out of there, I think.
If you guys want to hop in, you can. 800-636-1067. A call we took earlier today on the idea of starting this tournament on Sunday. It's going to continue through next weekend when we crown a winner. They'll have the quarterfinal matchups of the 8 participants in 4 games. Then we'll be down to 4 and 2 and eventually have one champion. I think it'd be a really cool thing, too, you know, because it's horse. You can kind of do the different variations of shots. If the WNBA was represented well and Tamika Catchings or, you know, Ali Quigley ended up having a lot of success in this, I think that would be really good for their brand and for their audiences. But where are the superstars? I mean, that was the question that was brought up by Rich and Only, and I think it was a really good take. Where's LeBron? Where is Steph Curry? I know Kevin Durant can't do this because he actually had the coronavirus and COVID-19. But Trae Young, thank goodness he said yes, gives this some current star power. I think LaVine is well-respected in basketball circles, Danny. He is a stud.
Yeah.
But, I mean, does he have national appeal? As far as the guys that, you know, people are going to drive an hour to go get an autograph from at a mall at some Nike store or something, you don't really have that. I'm sure they made the ask. I'd like to think they did anyway. But I wonder if they do this again. Let's say it's successful, goes off without a hitch, gets decent numbers, people watch it, it's well-reviewed. Maybe at that point, can you get a LeBron or a Steph or someone to jump in next time, do you think?
Yeah, that's what you'd hope. I mean, listen, it's not necessarily disrespect to the players that are there. I mean, Trae Young is a star on the rise. Chris Paul is a Hall of Famer to me. And Pierce will go, and Billups, you know, Mr. Big Shot. We know the resume's there, but right now, and that's kind of the dichotomy, is right now this game, basketball has surged in popularity because of their ability to market the individual. And there's never been a sport at any given time, maybe with the exception of like a Formula One or something like that, where each driver is his own business, but in a team sport, you've got each star has unbelievable amounts of sway and influence and agency, right? Where a year into a guy's four-year deal, he can already agitate and get himself traded to another super team, the Anthony Davis of the world, right? So, but superstars like James Harden, Giannis, and I mentioned Anthony Davis, Damian Lillard, where's Jokic? Where's Luka Doncic? Where's Kawhi Leonard? You know what I mean? Like, where's LeBron? The superstars are not involved here. And I think that's kind of a knock on it. Now, who knows what the logistics are? Maybe LeBron doesn't have a home gym in the conventional way, or the lighting wouldn't work. Or who knows what the millions of concerns are? Who knows who was asked and who wasn't? But you have to feel a bit underwhelmed at the cast of characters here if you're just a casual fan looking to tune in.
I think you need content so badly that it doesn't matter who's participating, to your point.
Right.
Like, you could have had, honestly, I would have watched this if you just picked, like, the guys that sit in the second row wearing suits that aren't injured on the Wizards roster. And I probably would have tuned in and watched this. I'd watch a local version on NBCSW if they got a couple
just
guys
Wizards
from,
doing it.
You know, Mason and GW or whatever. I think that'd be cool. Someone actually tweeted me and asked, they said, what about having the best college basketball players like Obi Toppin and some of the guys going in the top five, top ten, do one of these? I think that would be incredible. You know, I am all for any of it, but you're right. The more big names you have, obviously the better, both from the TV ratings and for just getting people to be intrigued and having you and I actually spend time talking about it after it's done. Next, our movie club. Last night we watched Empire Strikes Back. Danny hoodwinked me again twice. He has befuddled me by picking all Star Wars movies. We're going to hopefully be taking away his ability to form lists. But the movie club is next. Plus, we'll pick a movie to watch tonight as well on Grant and Danny right here on The Fan. .12:45 means movie club every day on Grant and Danny. Welcome back. 106.7 The Fan. Last night's movie, despite some confusion for me, was The Empire Strikes Back, a 1980 classic, 2-hour and 4-minute runtime. This was the second Star Wars installment of the original three. Of course, they're all oddly numbered, and so I watched 20 minutes of the wrong movie before realizing I need to go back. I missed something here. So this was indeed episode 5, Danny, The Empire Strikes Back.
Indeed, this is the best movie, in my opinion, of the Star Wars universe. It's not necessarily the favorite for everybody. It's my personal favorite movie. I think it just in terms of quality of movie, forget about journey, forget about kind of the story and, you know, the nostalgia of what Star Wars means. Directed by Irvin Kershner. Remember, 3 years after the original Star Wars comes out, you have the second installment, The Empire Strikes Back. Dramatic stakes. You have an obsessed Darth Vader now searching for the person that blew up the original Death Star in Luke Skywalker, and then one of the great, probably the greatest reveal in movie history, a turn that nobody knew, nobody saw coming, and it shocked audiences at the time, and now it's become common parlance, and everyone does the canned line of, Luke, I am your father, and everybody knows it, but man, oh man, I can only imagine being in theaters back in 1980, leaving in absolute shock that that was the case.
So about that twist, pretty large twist there. And I obviously knew he was his dad just because of pop culture.
Yeah, because you've been around. Yeah, of course.
Chris Farley into The Fan saying, Luke, I am your father. That's kind of when I learned that Darth Vader was the dad and Tommy Boy. But when we're originally seeing him talk to the Emperor, and we see the Emperor for the first time in Empire last night, and he says, basically, I think this is like Anakin Skywalker's son. Do they both know that Anakin Skywalker is in that suit and that means it's his kid and we don't? Or how does that work?
Oh, they all know. I mean,
okay, but we don't as an audience yet.
Right. We're not supposed to know. So those two know because they've got the shared history and the what you basically have to do to become a Sith, and that's what these two are. They're the masters of darkness of on that side of the Force, is basically abandon who you were and you become this new thing. So you hear that that line from Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, about a certain point of view, which basically tells you what he said was true, what he told Luke Skywalker's character was true, but it's from, again, that sort of vantage point is what it depends on. So Anakin Skywalker graduates and becomes Darth Vader.
All right, so I've got a bunch of notes here I can just bounce off of you.
Let's do it. Go.
I'll have a hard time reading my writing because I wrote them last night in the dark.
You had a lot of stuff that was right on point in the first film. The only thing that I disagreed with strongly was your slander of Chewbacca.
Right, which I feel stronger about than ever after last night.
There's
all right, so let's start with the first great moment of the movie to me where you're kind of like, damn, we're in this thing, is when he takes the lightsaber to the snow beast and he cuts him.
Yep.
Like, you see the power of that lightsaber. That was cool.
Massive moment. Again, he uses the Force, something he's still in its infancy learning how to do to get it to come out of the snow. Excellent.
Awesome scene where she kisses Luke to make Han Solo jealous. I like that.
Perfect. Yep.
Vader's score every time he's on, and I guess it's the – I don't know if it's his score, the Emperor's score, the Death Star score. Is it for him or for the Emperor or what? Just bad guys in general. It's a 1,000 out of 10.
It is John Williams. He is the master. It is the Imperial March, and it is perfect. You're 100% right.
The epic battle that takes place unbelievably early in the movie for such a good fight scene. Like, you do not see Act 1 fight scenes. I actually think it's probably superior to later – when the, you know, it's just smaller scaled, you know, lightsaber battle, whatever. But the actual in space fight that takes place in Act One, that's a lot for early in a movie. I liked it.
I mean, the initial battle of Hoth, right? I mean, where the AT-ATs, the giant Imperial walkers, are there. You get the tow cables, Luke launching himself up and slicing the bottom of it, throwing a thermal detonator in there, the entire deal. And then, as you mentioned, they kind of go through space. It's fantastic. It's right away. It drops you in.
Chewie is utterly incompetent. And I actually am annoyed by his entire existence.
That's blasphemy. I mean, I don't know how else to say that. That's blasphemous. That's ridiculous. That's absurd.
He's the best. Two movies, has literally done nothing to help anyone. At one point, kind of throws some guys around when Han Solo is about to get freezed. Yeah, all right, what's next?
Put C-3PO back together. Not a big
deal. This is a hot take. I don't think I've given you any hot takes yet. This one's hot. You ready?
Chewie, you're not liking Chewie's the hottest.
Okay, I'm sure. Millennium Falcon. Star of the movie. Like, that ship is so – it's recognizable every time I see
it.
I'm like, oh. And it's just – it's cool. I like Millennium Falcon. I like the ship.
That is why when it appears in the first moments of Force Awakens, tears came to my eyes. You get it. You get how important and how wonderful.
Oh, that's one of the times you cried?
Yep, that's one of the six. Yep,
wow,
absolutely.
Wow, that's funny.
Absolutely.
Okay. Wow, that means –
it's not hot at all.
Okay.
Again, the only heat comes from your Chewbacca opinion.
I've got so many more thoughts, so I got to mow through these. Who is the Emperor? Why can't Vader be the number one bad guy? I just feel like, you know, and this actually ties to something else. Vader, I wrote down, is all voice. Vader is not that scary. Like, Vader's not a good bad guy. He's got this guy hanging over him. He's not the ultimate bad guy. Why couldn't he be, like, the bad guy at the end of the big boss at the end of the level? I find Vader to be almost, like, comical and not the bad guy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peck. The number one most iconic bad guy of all time. And the whole point is he's conflicted, Grant. That's what you're coming to realize is Luke's speech to Yoda where there's still good in him. I felt it. The conflict, etc. That's the entire crux of this. This is the Skywalker saga. And it really, as much as it is a journey about Luke coming into his own as a Jedi, it's really a story just as much about Darth Vader as it is anything else. So he's a guy that was sort of tricked and bamboozled and locked into this terrible life that it's too late for him to turn back, or so he thinks. Palpatine is the looming presence, is the exact right vehicle for him. You'll get to know him a little bit more later. You'll see he's the most powerful.
In this fight against Luke, who was like a month ago was whining to his uncle, you know, the best bad guy ever is like struggling and you know, missing every opportunity to basically do damage. And
well, he doesn't
Luke's
want to
like,
kill him. He wants to turn him. He wants to train him.
He just seems, I don't know. I'm more worried about the Emperor than him.
Well, he easily cuts his hand off and knocks him through. I mean, well, anyway, he wins the duel.
I love Yoda. Yoda's great, by the way. Hilarious, like, word choice and diction and sentence structure.
That is
from
Yoda.
Yeah,
Yoda. He's the best. Mm-hmm.
This is. I hate myself for saying this because I'm that guy. But like, oh my God, would Han Solo have been Me Too'd? I mean, how inappropriate in 2020. is Han Solo. Seriously.
I know.
Think about never having seen this movie until now. I mean, he is, like, forcing himself constantly on the princess.
We need to talk about Han Solo as problematic. Like, that's and enter the Vox block. Yeah, right. I mean, 100%.
I mean, someone has to have written that at some point that I hate.
Just so handsome.
The space worm stomach thing was really funny. I thought that was good. Luke's much better actor in this movie, the local guy, Hamill.
Mark Hamill, yeah.
He got better at acting in those 3 years. That's good.
100% true. And he's got an arc, too, which feels good. He's not whining anymore. He's not bitching and moaning. Now, he still complains to Yoda too much. Like, just please accept the training, and you're already moving stuff with your mind. You blew up a giant space station just with a lucky shot. So let's believe some of these things are possible and stop being a negative Nancy.
Vader doesn't feel scary.
Oh, my God.
Fights back. R2-D2. So they're in the hallway. Why is R2-D2's volume so loud? Can't they ever turn his volume off? They're, like, trying to sneak up on people. And he's like, why are we doing that? Like,
good question about volume control.
Just mute that guy. That's not true. Impossible. Ruined moment. I don't know what that means. Oh, yes. Okay, so when Vader is fighting Luke on the bridge with the lightsabers,
yep,
you get this unbelievable, like, all-time cinematic reveal, presumably, where he says, Luke, I'm your father. The next line, seconds after that, that kind of ruined it for me, was Luke Skywalker in this exact voice going, that's not true, impossible, and it just kind of ruined the moment for me really badly.
Interesting. I mean, that has been parodied in cartoons, you know, a million times over and mocked and made fun of. So you're right. I mean, it's part of, but that's part of Star Wars' charm to a lot of people is some of the hammed up kind of overacting and, you know, that's not the best moment. You're 100% right about that, but it fit in the universe because it's cheesy, and Star Wars is cheesy. You know, but you're right. It's not great.
Watching that, I'm thinking, oh my God, what a moment. And then he goes, oh, well, me. It just, I hated it.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, it was so bad.
It's impossible.
Search your feelings. Oh, okay.
Who is Ben? He's hanging on for his life.
Obi-Wan.
Calling for Princess and Ben. Okay. That's Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Got it. Let's see. Lando, I don't know whether to hate or love that guy.
Oh, he's amazing.
R2-D2 is the hero. Oh, that's the last one. R2-D2 like saves the day by getting them
all
their
the
speed.
Mm-hmm.
Chewbacca still does nothing. They're relying on him to get them going. He can't do anything. R2-D2 comes and saves the day. Chewbacca, through now 4 hours of film, has not done one productive thing.
Well, that's because Chewie is the muscle. Chewie is the big, you know, he's the heater in wrestling. He would be the guy that would take all the bumps for Han.
Just incredibly loyal.
So he's taking the bumps.
Yeah, I mean, R2-D2 is the brain stuff too. I mean, yeah, R2-D2 is sort of the unsung hero. You're right about that.
I will say he picked up C-3PO and put them back together, and so that was cool, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's choking Lando out because he's ticked off because he double crossed Han. I mean, you the whole point of Chewie is, as Tommy says, A, muscle, B, the loyalty to his friends. He's just a wonderful, lovable, super giant Wookiee.
So that ran long, so we'll have to wait until next hour to pick our movie for tonight, which is fine. Movie Club will carry over after Michael Lombardi, who joins the show next. Overall, okay with my observations?
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it again, except for Chewie. And Darth Vader, ultimately. not being intimidating or whatever you want to call it. He's the most iconic man of all time.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.